It is the best time to be plant-based with all of the amazing options on the market and with all of the resources that cover time and convenience and cost. If there was ever a time, it is now to be vegan.
Welcome, listeners. I'm glad you are here.
Welcome back to the Live Vegan Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Leahy, and this is a podcast featuring inspirational leaders in the animal rights community. We are joined by co-host and legionnaire of logic, Ben LaWa. What's up, Ben?
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great. How many times have you heard the excuse, I would be vegan, but it's just too expensive?
Too many times.
Have we ever done that excuse?
I think so.
We must have, right?
It's getting hard to come up with more and more. I'm stretching now.
Yeah, you have to get a little creative. At the end of every single episode, Ben throws an excuse at me as to why people think they should not go vegan, and I do my best to answer them. So I'm pretty sure we've addressed this one. But today's guest is going to tell us a little bit more about why that's not true at all. And I know last episode we discussed how subsidies, government subsidies, make animal products cheaper. But despite this very, very unfair playing field, it is possible to live healthily on a vegan diet without breaking your budget. Specifically, today's guest, Tony Akimoto, has a meal plan to keep the grocery bill under $30 per person per week. That's pretty incredible considering I can easily spend $15 on a meal if I'm on the road. I guess, to be fair, I'm mixing Canadian dollars and U.S. dollars, but that's still much, much cheaper. And if you think about it, plants should be cheaper. They're easier on the environment, they demand fewer resources, and are better overall for our health. Tony Akimoto is the founder of the very popular website plantbasedonabudget.com, which offers a food blog, meal plans, and useful tips on how to save money. She's also the author of the Super Easy Vegan Slow Cooker Cookbook. That's quite the name for a book. And the co-author of The Friendly Vegan Cookbook. And her newest book, Plant-Based on a Budget, was just released this year in 2019. So congratulations on that. I have given it a read. It's amazing. My five-year-old daughter is the boss of our house, and she loves it. She decides what we cook by looking at the pictures, and she gives this book way more yums than yucks. Tony has been featured in Reader's Digest, U.S. News and World Report, the documentary What the Health, and many other news outlets. She is a burrito enthusiast and spends her free time swing dancing. Welcome to the show, Tony, and thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you guys.
All right, let's start with the most general question. Is eating plant-based expensive?
Well, I think it depends on how you're eating. If you're just going to the store without any agenda and buying whatever without a rhyme or reason, I think it can be expensive. But if you're smart about your shopping and you go and shop with intention and you focus on healthy plant-based staples like rice and beans and lentils, then it can be very affordable.
Yeah, I noticed in the book, you said your father, George Akimoto, used to hold up the line at the grocery store to ensure he got the sale price. I love this idea, as I often see myself just kind of going with the flow to get done faster and not paying attention to the prices. But is that what we have to do in order to save money?
There are lots and lots of ways to save money, but what I was talking about in that part of the book was that changing your frame of mind and making it so that you're not really afraid to inconvenience people. So in that example, I talked about how my dad would hold up the line and ask the sales clerk to go check on the price if it wasn't ringing up. And he'd be like, I saw that it was $2 off and you're ringing it up at full price. And so people were like tapping their foot behind us and obviously very annoyed and inconvenienced. And he would not care. And I would be mortified. I'd be like, Dad, all these people are so upset with us. And he's like, I don't care. They don't pay my bills. And that's where I want people to be. I want them to be okay giving something back and letting go of the shame and embarrassment that goes with being budget conscious and wanting to save money. And that goes with a lot of things. I remember my parents also shopped at the thrift store for my clothing, and I would be so embarrassed. But now that I think about it, I think that's a more sustainable way to shop. That's cheaper, more economical way to shop for your kids, especially because they're growing. And I just think my parents were doing it right.
So the lesson to be learned is, let's start annoying people in grocery stores. Okay.
Yes. You want to make friends, annoy them at the grocery store.
Now people are really going to hate vegans.
Yeah. And there are lots of other ways. If you don't want to do that, you can, again, shop with intention, make a list. What I like to do first is go through what I have in my pantry and in my refrigerator and see what I can work around those things. So say I have some pasta and some frozen broccoli. I'll go to the store, or on my weekly list, I'll know that I want to buy marinara sauce to add to my pasta and broccoli, and maybe I'll get some frozen peas or something like that. So I'm only having to buy part of it instead of creating a meal plan with 100% new ingredients that I need to buy that week. So using what I already have is one way. And then shopping seasonally, of course, buying in bulk. Those are the big easy ones. But then also you can go further, and this is another thing that makes shopping, you have to like get there. So this is like next level. But take your measuring cups with you when you're in the bulk section and only buy what you need. What I do is I either bring my reusable produce bags, but if you're using the plastic bag there, cover your measuring cup and measure out what you're getting so that you're not buying way more than you need. That's going to be more for you to store in your house and also more money. So there are tips like that, and I've got 30 of those money saving tips in the book, and then I also have 30 time saving tips as well.
Yeah, I saw that idea. It's a really great idea, because if I look in my pantry, I notice I have all these different types of flour, and I never use them. They've been in there for months, but you know, certain recipes called for different types of flour, so I ended up buying entire bags just for that recipe. So you're saying we can just go to the bulk store and buy exactly what we need, which might be a cup of that particular kind of flour if we're using it for a recipe. It's a great idea.
Yeah, and sometimes it also has to do with where you shop. So making sure that you're shopping at a place that is good for you and your family. I know that the closest most convenient grocery store to me is very, very expensive. It's one of the most expensive in Sacramento. It's like a natural foods co-op. But if I drive maybe 5 minutes, there's this really wonderful big warehouse style grocery store that has aisles of bulk bins. And so they're very affordable and allow me to be more flexible about my shopping, like with measuring cups.
What are the staple foods for eating, I don't want to say cheap, but inexpensive? Is it as simple as just eating rice and beans all the time?
Well, I guess it depends on how you make that. I do eat a lot of rice and beans, but I get creative with them. And I will do like fried rice, or I'll do Indian food. I've been all about Ethiopian. I bought the cookbook called Teflove. And so I use some of the staples that I use regularly, like lentils or split peas, in Ethiopian dishes now. And you can get really creative with those staples that sound really boring, like split peas. And people usually only think of split pea soup, but there's a lot that you can do with them. And same with beans, and same with rice. So yeah, those are my favorite staples to save money. They're very affordable. Often, like where I grocery shop, it's probably around 70 cents per pound for beans. But even if you go to the Dollar Tree store, Dollar Tree has a pound of beans and a pound of rice for $1. So yeah, they're very inexpensive and also versatile.
And still healthy, right? That's
and very healthy. Yep.
We don't want to compromise on health. Most of us don't anyway. You mentioned Teff Love. Are you talking about the grain Teff?
Yes, but there's a cookbook that is an Ethiopian cookbook that's vegan. It's all vegan Ethiopian food, and it's called Teff Love. And
is it because they use the grain teff in a lot of their recipes?
It's because they use teff in the bread.
Okay,
that they eat.
I see.
Yeah.
Because I just found out about teff maybe 6 months to a year ago. My naturopath doctor recommended it, and I said, "What's that?" I've never heard of it. So you've tried teff before. Is it good?
Yeah, it is good.
All right.
Well, I have never used it myself in cooking, but I have eaten it.
Okay. So I wanted to ask, how do I stop myself when I'm in Costco? Because every time I go, there's a Costco around the corner from where I live now. And at first I was so happy, but now I'm like, every time I walk in there, I spend $300 because I need the peanut butter, right? I end up buying like cases of beans and all these different things that I don't necessarily need right now, but I think I'm saving money, so I spend more. What can I do to curb that?
Definitely, that's where meal planning helps. Planning your meals and buying only what you need is going to cut your costs down dramatically. If I were buying all of the things only because I thought I was getting a good deal, I would get so much stuff that I wanted but didn't need. And same when I go to Costco, I have to make sure I'm shopping with intention and only going and buying what I meant to buy, because there's so much good stuff. And I've done a couple vegan at Costco videos, and there are so many options available, and some of them are in line with the Whole Foods plant-based diet, but there are also a lot of tasty, like there's some hodosoy. Do you know what hodosoy is?
No, I've never heard of it. Okay. Ben, do you know?
I've never heard of that.
It's they make the sofritas at Chipotle. Do you guys have Chipotle?
Yes, we do have that. And I'm familiar with the sofritas. Yeah. But I didn't know who made it.
Okay, hodosoy makes those. They're based out of Oakland, which is near where I live. And they also have burgers and other products that you can buy for really cheap if you go to Costco, in our region at least. And so it's easy to go there and be like, oh, I love this brand, and then buy three boxes of hodosoy burgers and whatever else is available at the time. And so I have to be very responsible and know my budget and know that that's not what I really want. What I want to do is save money and make sure I'm using that money for other things that matter, like a rainy day fund.
But there must be a voice in your head that says, I'll save money in the long run if I buy in bulk now, right? What do you say to that voice?
So I do struggle with that, because something I did talk about in my book is how I stock up when Christmas is over. I'll go and buy a bunch of things, like they have cheap Tupperware or cupcake liners with snowmen on them. I'll buy all of those. I don't really need them, but I know that because they're 80% off, that is a steal, and I can use them throughout the year because I don't care that they have snowmen on them. And for those things, I do think, because I know I'm saving 80%, that is a good deal. But I don't think that the savings that I'm going to have at Costco, unless something is on super clearance, are going to be so significant.
Okay.
I guess it depends on how big your family is too, and how quickly you're going through food. If you've got a family of six, then I can see how those big purchases are going to save you money because they go through food faster. But if you find that your food is going bad or that you're not getting to it for maybe months, then I don't think it's worth it.
All right. So we've established that eating healthy on a plant-based diet isn't expensive. It's easy to do. What if I don't care about being healthy? What if I just want some delicious convenient food. So there's a lot of people that are just like, oh, I just don't have time and I can't go vegan. It's just easier for me to swing by KFC.
Well, do those then people what? Really how, care about money? Is that
the well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, so maybe they still care about money, but I just, you know, I don't really care. I just want something delicious. I want something greasy. I don't care about necessarily about being healthy.
Well, there something are
that
lots
doesn't
of,
take a lot of time, right?
Yeah, there are lots of really good cookbooks that have comfort foods, and I would recommend checking those out. You can do a quick Google search, and some of them are not going to take a lot of time. But my book, if you want to eat healthy, and that's what I'm encouraging people to do, and to consider making at least small steps toward a healthier diet, I made sure that in my book, all of the recipe, I think like 98 of the 100 recipes were done under 30 minutes. And so, and a lot of the time I gave tips on how to make that faster if you have an Instant Pot. And if I know Instant Pots or pressure cookers can be a little bit expensive, but I got mine on Amazon for $30 off because I got it used with a dent. It has a dent and it doesn't affect its functionality. It just was cosmetic and I got $30 off and I use that thing 2 to 3 times a day, making beans for the week, quinoa for the week, and not having to worry about it at all when the work week starts and gets hectic. And at the end of the day, when I don't want to figure out what I'm going to make, I don't have to worry about it because I already have steamed vegetables for the week. Some things that I steam regularly are carrots, sweet potatoes, and then I have quinoa and a different kind of bean or legume. I usually cook either a pot of lentils or a pot of pinto beans, and then you can mix and match those throughout the week. So you can throw them in a sauce. You can throw things in a stir fry. You can throw things in a soup, a stew, and you can just even put on a like a dressing over it and eat it in like in a bowl, and not have to worry about it at all during the work week.
Are you available to hire as a personal chef? It all sounds amazing. So we were wondering, because you basically hit all the boxes. It's healthy, it's cheap, and it's less than 30 minutes a meal. But the big question, when I hear $30 a week, I'm skeptical, right? Because I'm a wannabe athlete. I watch a lot of basketball on television, so I need a lot of calories, and I want to be full.
Wait, you're an athlete because you watch basketball? You need to reevaluate this, Kevin.
I'm just saying a lot of people probably think they need more calories than they actually need. So am I going to get enough to fill me up on $30 per person per week?
Yes. So, okay. Before I wrote this book, I wrote some meal plans, and those are available at plantbasedmealplan.com. And what I had heard over and over and over again from people was that it was too hard to string together recipes for one meal plan in a week and still be budget conscious, because they would pick different recipes and maybe those recipes didn't have ingredients that were similar. So instead of buying an onion and making it last over two recipes, they were having to get a bell pepper for this one and an onion for this one. And so they were having to buy more ingredients than they needed, or that they were just adding up to too much. And so what I started doing was creating meal plans that were super budget conscious. And I did $25 a week, because in the United States, it was less than the government allotted. So if you were receiving government assistance for food, then they would give you a certain amount of money. And if you were receiving the maximum benefits, this covered you and even gave you more flexibility with your budget. So there was still money left over. And I chose $25 a week and created meal plans that were breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and that equaled about $1.20 per meal. And I made them as filling as possible because I personally believe in intuitive eating and I want people to eat until they're full and not worry about it, especially when you're eating so clean. And so that is what the meal plans were. And I co-wrote those with my, I think I mentioned this already, with my friend Michelle Kane. And it laid it out again, grocery shopping list, where to find it in the grocery store, how to make it, how long it's going to take you. And each one had a full color picture so that you can see what it's supposed to look like. If you didn't have a lot of experience in cooking, there was a total breakdown for you.
Okay. I got a question for you, for me personally. So I've got two kids and we eat healthy dinners. I don't spend too much. I've got dinner taken care of, but what about packing lunches for school? I think I spend probably 3/4 of my food budget on food to send us to school for my kids. Well, can you help me out?
I personally don't have any children, but I know that for my husband, I pack both of our lunches for, and what I do is I use the leftovers. So when I do my meal plans in both the book and in the meal plans that I've created, I do 4 entrees per week. So I'm cooking 4 big meals, and then I'm making enough for each of those meals to last 3 times. And so then I take, so that I'm not tired of only one thing. You know how when you make a big pot of chili and you eat it all week, and then by the end you're like, I hate chili, I never want chili again. I help people avoid that burnout of that meal by giving them several things to choose from and then splitting it up over different days and making it so that they're taking different meals every day for lunch that they've already cooked for the week for their dinners. Does that make sense?
So you're sharing, it's like a potluck sort of, right? You're sharing with others? Is that what you're saying?
Like, no, you're cooking just for yourself. Yeah.
It's all for yourself. Yeah, I thought you were doing it with someone else.
No, okay. I'll make chili, or I'll make a stew, or I'll make a stir fry, and I'll make sure that I make more than what I need for one meal so that I can eat it the next day or the day after. And
yes.
It works.
But I'm not really sure how that works with children because I don't have kids.
Yeah, it's just sending them stuff because they don't have a microwave. They can't, you know, just heat things up. So it's a challenge. And finding the prep time, like if I wanted to make them a pasta salad or something, it could take time. So it's that's a challenge. Maybe that's something for your next book.
Yes, I will. I will ask my friends who have kids what their big solutions are. Okay. But actually, one of the things that you just mentioned was another tip in my book, and that's food sharing. If you have someone at work who can swap with you, you can do a big meal of a lasagna and make 2 of them and then swap them with your friend. And you can give them, and that's also a really great way to introduce people to plant-based. You'll say, I'm a vegan, and here are some recipes if you want to try, and then you can swap food together. So they would make a double batch, and you would make a double batch, and then one batch will be swapped so that you're not eating the same thing each week, and neither are they.
Right. That's what I thought you were getting at. I knew. I read that somewhere in the book. It's a great idea because you get fatigued with the same dish, especially if you cook it in a large quantity.
Mm-hmm.
So I am curious about the now, the immediate. Like, what's your go-to, your absolute favorite? For me, it's a piece of bread dipped in hummus because there's no prep time at all. It's literally dipping it in hummus and eating it. Because sometimes you come home and maybe not you, it seems like you're always planning out your meals, but I'm poor at planning, and sometimes I come home and I'm just really hungry and I've got to eat something right now. So bread and hummus works. Do you have a go-to that's like almost immediate and almost no prep time?
Yes, I will do they're like bean quesadillas, but with store-bought refried beans. So you can make sure that you get the vegetarian refried beans, and then you pour nutritional yeast on that inside of a flour tortilla and microwave it, and it's really good. It tastes like it tastes kind of like a quesadilla, but
are the refried better, beans from a better. Can?
Yep.
Okay, I see. And then nutritional yeast, and then in the microwave.
Yep, and that's super quick. And if I'm feeling fancy, I'll put in avocado.
Okay, the next level.
Ooh, I'm down. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's quick to make and delicious.
All right. What about entertaining non-vegans? Do you have a go-to? What's something that we can make for them that'll, you know, make them enjoy plant-based food or realize that you can enjoy plant-based food?
I like to cook things that are really familiar to them, and so some things that I have cooked in the past are I have a good lentil shepherd's pie, and that's lentils on the bottom and then mashed potatoes on the top, and I dice up some vegetables into the lentils like carrots and celery, and then I'll top it with gravy. So something like that, it works.
Is that in
well.
Your cookbook? Because I need that in my life.
That's in my meal plan.
Okay.
I'm happy to send that over. I'll send that over to you though.
Oh, thank you.
So that, and then it's a casserole dish. I love casseroles for entertaining because that means less work for me. And what I do with this one is, this is from my book, I do a pasta. So I boil pasta and I put a red sauce in it. And sometimes I'll add frozen broccoli or frozen peas. And then in a pan, I'll stir fry some tofu and some lemon juice and garlic and salt and put that on, and it turns into kind of a ricotta, and then I'll bake it. So I'll add the pasta and red sauce, then on top I'll add the tofu ricotta and bake that. And so it's not a lot of effort on my part, and it makes them feel like they're eating something that they've already had. They don't think twice about the tofu ricotta because it's so good.
That's interesting. I've done the red sauce pasta and broccoli thing many, many times, but I've never thought to add tofu on top. So you like scramble it and put it on top, mm-hmm. and then bake it? Okay. That's a great idea. Yep. Never thought of that. So it comes out like a baked ziti almost.
And then something that I regularly do is, and this is also easy on the chef, is I'll saute store-bought soy riso. So you can get that at Trader Joe's or even Walmart or Winco or where, I don't know what grocery stores you have, but I'm sure you guys have soy riso available. Is that true? Do you have soy riso?
We have field roast. It's similar, right? Kind of?
No.
No? Okay.
Soy riso, it tastes like chorizo, which is, it has a very specific spice blend.
Yeah, chorizo, I know, it's like a spicy sausage, right?
Yes. So they have a soy-based one called soy riso.
Got it.
And
I don't think we have that here.
I've never heard of it.
Okay.
So.
Oh, that's sad. It's one of my favorites.
I spend a lot of time in Western New York, too, and I don't remember ever seeing it there either.
I know for sure they have it at Trader Joe's. Do you guys have Trader Joe's?
We do not. Canada can't be great in all categories.
Buffalo does.
We okay. fail in a couple of categories.
Well, I know that they have it at places like, do you have Walmart?
We do have Walmart, yes.
Okay. I know that they have had it at certain Walmarts that I've been to, and some other big giant stores. But anyway, I'll blend that up with some black beans, and then over the flame on my gas stove, I'll warm up some corn tortillas. Do you know when they're just a little bit charred? Have you ever gone to a Mexican restaurant and they're just a little bit charred, your corn tortillas?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what they should be like, you're saying?
Yes. So that's what they should be like. And then you put on top of it your mixture of soy riso and beans, and then put on some chopped lettuce, chopped tomatoes, red onion, and maybe sprinkle some nutritional yeast on it. And then you can put some, what I like to do is some quinoa cooked in tomato sauce. It's very similar to how you make Spanish rice, but use quinoa instead of the white rice. And then you can either do your canned beans of pinto or your refried pinto, or you can make your own, which is what I do in the pressure cooker, and it's much better and much cheaper. And that meal is always impressive to my omnivorous guests.
Wow, there's so many creative ideas that are coming out here. This is amazing. Okay, I think about this a lot. Ever since I was in college, somebody said I live to eat, and I'm thinking, no, we eat to live, right? So, how do we fall in love with food if you think the way I do, which is food is just fuel for the body? And I'm actually intrigued by Soylent, if you're familiar with that, which is just take a drink, you're satiated, get all the vitamins and minerals you need, and move on to the next task. I'm no longer hungry. But I've heard from like doctors and naturopaths that the better your relationship with food is, the healthier overall your body is, because you can actually absorb the nutrients and the vitamins in a more effective way if you really fall in love with the food. Not sure if that's true.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I have not heard of that, but that would be cool. And in that case, I would be very filled with good nutrients because I too love food. And I'm wondering what you like, what are you eating? What are you eating right now? Like, is
You're
it pretty
intrigued.
basic or yeah, tell me about it.
Sure. I always start with a smoothie in the mornings. So, spinach and bananas and peanut butter and some hemp seeds, flax seeds, and some frozen fruit. And then for lunch, it's usually a sandwich or a burrito. And for dinner, we do some kind of rice slash quinoa slash pasta with lots of veggies mixed in with different sauces depending on how we're feeling. Obviously, there's always taco night that changes things up. We sometimes do chilies or soups. But yeah, that's pretty much everything there. I don't
Well,
think
this.
yeah, I don't think it's the food necessarily. It's probably just like my
Okay.
mental I don't know, anguish with food and the way that I was brought up. I was always a really skinny kid, and everybody said, eat more, eat more, you gotta eat more. And so I have this like weird relationship with food now.
Yeah, it's I've had a similar upbringing where I think in Mexican American culture, a more full-figured woman is attractive. And so my family, they would regularly tell me that I should be eating because I'm wasting away, is what they'd say. And it's interesting how those things stay with you.
Totally,
So I
yeah.
totally understand what you're saying.
But I think it's important to love your food, right? Do you have any tips for someone that, like, I don't know, how do we fall back in love with food?
I think it's beginning the relationship. I talk to so many people who have this disconnect with food because they are looking for the most fast, convenient ways to eat and be done rather than cook their food, smell their food. I love to like add different spices and smell what the spice blend is coming, how it's coming together. And so to touch it and smell it and taste it while you're cooking different things and really develop a relationship with it. And that's not something that needs to require a lot of your time. So if you're swamped and don't have a lot of time, it doesn't need to take hours of cooking to develop this relationship. It can be starting small with hummus wraps. A lot of people don't have any relationship. They eat from a can, or they're stopping at the fast food place, or they are buying frozen packaged foods. And I recommend going back and being involved with what you're eating in some way.
All right. So you just got married recently, correct?
I did. Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What was it like planning a vegan wedding?
Oh, it was so fun. Okay. So we knew that a lot of our guests, especially my family, they're not plant-based, and it was important to us to have the best offerings so that the people who were skeptical left feeling like, dang, that was good. And we did not disappoint. And at first I was really skeptical because our caterer said that they have to, so our venue said that we have to use their caterer, and they didn't have any experience with vegan cooking. And so I was like, uh-oh, how is this going to work? But we gave them recipes from my book. We gave them companies that we wanted them to try to use, and they made it happen for us. So if someone else who's listening is getting married and they're skeptical of the circumstances, maybe they don't have a super vegan-friendly catering list, it can be done. Just work with them and tell them your needs, because likely they'll accommodate. And that's exactly what happened to mine. For our menu, we chose for starters, we had Miyoko's cheese and crackers and spring rolls for the appetizers during the cocktail hour. And then we had a salad for the first course. And then we had just scramble the egg as one of the entree options with a bunch of vegetables. So if you had ever eaten an egg scramble, it was very similar with bell peppers and spinach and a lot of other vegetables. And then we made chilaquiles from a cookbook made out of tofu instead of eggs. And we had different breakfast muffins. So we got married in the morning and had a brunch wedding. And oh, and then for the carving station, we had a field roast on croûte. And it was so cool because we had a real chef with a big giant hat on at the carving station with these big tools carving the field roast. It was very cool to see.
Oh, that's a great idea. I always envision, at least my family, my extended family, people being reluctant to come to my vegan wedding because they don't think they're going to get enough good food. But the way you just painted that picture, that would definitely satiate everyone.
Yep. And we had a vegan cake. A friend of mine gifted us our cake, and she was a non-vegan, but learned how to bake vegan. She tried different egg replacers until she got the right one, which was the neat egg, and made this 4-tier beautiful cake with fruit all over it, and it was vanilla with orange zest and raspberry frosting. I'm sorry, raspberry filling and vanilla frosting. It was beautiful, and it was cool that a non-vegan would learn how to bake vegan cakes and now have that up her sleeve. So when she's baking, she has the vegan knowledge of baking.
Okay, since you mentioned cakes, what's some... it's a good question. What's some dessert ideas? I've got, I have a sweet addiction and I'm working on it. I'm trying to get rid of it, but I can't. So what are some inexpensive dessert ideas? And don't just say fruit.
Oh, I would never, Okay. So one of the things that I make the most, and it's my favorite thing, and it's pretty common. It's a chocolate pie that is made from silken tofu. So it's one package of silken tofu, one package of melted chocolate chips, and 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract blended until smooth in the blender or food processor, and then poured into a prepared crust. You can make the crust out of cookies in a baking sheet, or you can buy a prepared graham cracker crust or ginger snap crust or Oreo crust or whatever kind of crust you want, and then put it in the refrigerator to set. Or if you're like me and super impatient, put it in the freezer for a few minutes and let it solidify. You want the chocolate to harden, and then it slices so perfectly and smoothly. And I like to put some, either I'll make my own coconut whipped cream, which is just a can of full fat coconut left into the refrigerator, and coconut milk or coconut cream. And then pour the water that it'll separate. You're going to pour the water out and blend that with some sugar and vanilla extract. You can put that on top of your chocolate pie and some berries, and that is really good.
Oh man. All right. I'm reluctant to do this, but I want to go back to the meals because we're talking about desserts, and I kind of want to end it, but we can't not talk about the perfect burrito. You're a burrito enthusiast, right? So how do you do that? How do you create, someone like yourself calling yourself a burrito enthusiast, how do you create the perfect burrito?
I think for my perfect burrito, it comes down to making your own perfect beans. And the way I do that, I have invested in a pressure cooker, but before that I had a slow cooker that I bought from the thrift store for $4, and I used to slow cook my beans. But what I do is I cook my beans in the pressure cooker with a little bit of salt, onion, and a full diced jalapeno, including the seeds, because I like it a little bit spicy. And if you don't have a jalapeno, you can just put red chili flakes, and then you cook them. I cook them for about 30 to 40 minutes, depending on how old they are and how many beans I've put in there. And getting those to the right consistency is the key to my perfect burrito. I get it to the right consistency. I pour out most of the water, if not all the water, and then if I'm feeling like I have more time, I'll put in a little bit of water at the time to get the right consistency, and then I'll mash them so that they look like refried beans, but I have not fried them because I don't want the unhealthy fried part. And that's the key to the perfect burrito, is getting the perfectly spiced beans in there. And I'll usually do that quinoa that I mentioned. It's cooked like Spanish rice, but with quinoa instead, so it's a little bit healthier than the white rice. And always avocado. Some people like guacamole, but I'm still a fan of just avocado slices. So even when I go out to a restaurant, I always get avocados on the side so that I can make my perfect ratio of burrito and avocado in my mouth. And then you can do either, I like to make my own cashew cream, but you can do if you like a creamy taste like I do, because that's how I was raised, eating the best burritos with sour cream. I'll make my own cashew cream to put that in my perfect burrito.
So we were told that
they used to have
I was hungry when we started. This was a bad idea.
I should have eaten first.
But we were told that you used to be a huge fan of Taco Bell. Is that where this burrito enthusiasm came from? And and how do you go from being someone obsessed with Taco Bell to a healthy plant-based eater?
Well, I did not learn my burrito loving from Taco Bell, but I instead learned it from my family, who they are Mexican-American and always have Mexican food at their house. And so they have made me the best of the best. And that's where I learned my burrito connoisseur.
So how do you go from eating authentic Mexican good food to Taco Bell?
Well, Taco Bell was right across the street from my high school. And so I ate there because it was convenient and cool. Like all high schoolers, we want to be cool. And all my friends would go there right after after the bell rang. We'd walk over to Taco Bell, eat our lunch, and then come back. So I was eating Taco Bell nearly every day. And then how that changed was I was on the track team, and I was feeling ill all the time after I was eating Taco Bell. and then running. And so my coach suggested that I shouldn't be eating fast food, and further, I shouldn't be eating as much red meat before I went to track practice. And so to follow his advice, I lessened both. And then that's how I started my journey to plant-based eating, is I lessened my red meat consumption. So it was, for me, health and performance that led me to being now very conscious of my environment, and then, of course, my impact on animals and my health.
Right, all without compromising on taste, which is super important.
And money.
And money, right, of course. So is there, after all these years of experience and learning what you've learned, is there anything non-veg that can't be recreated to be vegan?
I have not had menudo. So at my family, that's something that they ate, and I just have given up on it. I've used hominy in other styles of soups, but it's not the same, but it works well for me, and I'm fine with it. But that's one thing I haven't been able to replace.
And what's that?
Hominy?
Hominy is, it's like the white corn, like the big white corn.
Okay.
Sorry. Did you find it?
Is it H-O-M-O-N?
I-N-Y.
I-N-Y.
You can look it up after, Kevin. We got a show to do here.
I-N-Y.
Okay. Yes. I am not familiar with this. Okay. I've never seen this before.
Okay. Well, it's really yummy. It's good in soups, or I've had it in a really good, I got it at a restaurant in Sacramento called Mother, and they served it with like a green salsa on top of it and then baked, and that was delicious too.
Okay, so we can veganize every dish, essentially, right?
Well, menudo is a dish that uses hominy, and it's made with tripe, and tripe is not something that has been made vegan, and that is
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so
all right, well, let's get beyond meat on that.
Yeah.
we need vegan tripe next after the sausages are perfected.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we're just about running out of time, and you might have already answered this with the perfect burrito, but let's say you've got one last meal. It's a little dark, but you know where I'm going. What's the meal for you?
Say it's not the burrito, but I would say it would be a really delicious bowl of ramen soup. And I'm talking like homemade noodles or house-made noodles from a ramen shop with really rich broth and tons of veggies on it. And tofu.
That also sounds pretty easy to make,
right? I guess it can be, but I like a really rich broth, and I only know a few ramen houses that have perfected the best ramen.
Okay, authentic ramen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm used to whatever I saw in college, those little packets that are like
instant
30 cents.
Instant ramen pop, yeah.
Like Mr. Ramen. Noodles?
Yeah. Well, the ones, no, Mr. Noodles is different. There's other ones than like, a little.
You got the cup of noodles and Nissan noodles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Noodles is a way to eat cheap.
All right, so that does wrap up our interview. I ate before this, and now I'm hungry again. Like, how did this happen? I said I'm not going to eat anything after this, but now I'm going to have to go make something. And by the way, fruit is what I get at convention centers every time I go out for dessert. And then you tell us about this amazing dessert. I didn't even know that existed. So I'm going to be demanding that next time I go out to somewhere for dessert.
Go make it.
Right. Just make it today. I assume you would never want the food pill. You don't know what the food pill is.
I have no idea what that means, the food, but probably not.
The food pill, like the Jetsons pill, you know, where you pop a pill and you're just... You're satiated, you go on with your day.
Nope.
Okay, I didn't think so.
That's not actually a thing, is it?
Not yet.
All right. It will be.
One day, it's coming. All right, well, thank you for all you do. Thank you for spreading the message. You're certainly helping people make the transition, because so many people have so many different excuses to not go plant-based, and you really knock out three main ones with your work, and in particular this newest book, Plant-Based on a Budget. It's quick, it's cheap, and it's delicious, and of course it's healthy, so like, how could you go wrong? And you really guide the reader exactly where they should be in terms of planning out their meals for the entire week. So it really helps save money, helps us be healthier overall. So thank you for joining us, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you for having me.
Also, don't forget to send me that shepherd's pie recipe.
I'm on it.
If you want, Tony, I can link it so that everyone can have a look at the ingredients.
Oh, that's a great idea, Kevin.
That's up to Tony, though. If she wants to keep it private, that's up to her.
Secret ingredients. No, right. I'll send it over. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. I have to ask you before we wrap up, how does someone become one of your taste testers? I saw at the end of your book, you have an army of taste testers. Is it possible to get that job?
Yes. So if anyone emails me, tony@plantbasedonabudget.com, I'm actually looking for recipe testers right now, and they don't have to be in California. They can be inexperienced cooks. That's even better. I am going to write my new book with someone named Michelle Kane. And the premise of this book is going to be the best of the best. If you're serving your non-vegan family members, what are you going to serve them that's going to wow them, blow their socks off? And that's the new project I'm looking for recipe testers for.
That is exactly what I need.
I'm in. I'm 100% in.
So I was thinking you were going to send already prepared meals to anyone all over North America, but that's not how this works. I was going to say, I hope it's
You're
hot
just gonna
by the
sign
time
up
it gets
for
to Toronto.
The free food program?
Yeah. Okay, so you send recipes to select individuals, they make it at home, and they give you feedback.
Yes.
Got it. That sounds like fun. Sign me up, please.
Great. You'll be hearing from me very soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. All right, we are back. How'd you like an episode talking about nothing but food?
Nothing but food, and food that is inexpensive. And I think I'm going to get this book. I know you already have it and you've already gone through it, but I think I need this cookbook so that I can, like, I cook for two kids and myself, and it can get expensive. So.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked the question about what to feed your kids when they go to school. Cause I definitely have that same problem when I'm making lunch for my daughter. It's kind of the same four things that I rotate through. You know, it's always a sandwich.
I make a lot of tofurkey and vegan cheese sandwiches with cucumbers or something on them.
Yeah, or I'll do like a vegan cheese spread, or
hummus. Sometimes I put hummus and crackers. Yeah, it's the same thing. So I'm like, I want some new ideas for lunches.
You can do sun butter and jelly. You can't do peanut butter anymore.
I've actually done that. I do wow butter.
Oh, wow butter. I don't know. That's nut free, I assume.
Yeah, I think it's soy based.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I've had it. I don't like it personally, but my kids eat it, so I'm good with it. As someone that's obsessed with peanut butter, it's nowhere close to peanut butter.
I am also obsessed with peanut butter. I didn't know that about you. Look how much we have in common.
See, after all this time, we're still learning about each other.
Yeah, I think it's a little unhealthy how much I love peanut butter, honestly. Anyway, we could talk about that another time.
Let's do an episode about peanut butter. But no, I'm glad we had this episode, because the excuse we hear so much, you know, the vegan food's expensive, and it really bothers me, because you just look at all the countries that consume the most animal products per capita, or the most meat per capita, and it's all your wealthiest countries in the world. And then go to the bottom, and all the countries that eat the least animal products per capita are all your poorest countries in the world. So it goes to show you that you know, rice and beans and whatever grains people have, it's not expensive.
Yeah.
It's not expensive at all. If you want to eat Beyond Burgers for dinner every day, okay, yeah, it's going to get expensive. But you can eat just food and healthy food for really cheap and cheaper.
Yeah, even the poorest countries in the world can still eat a healthy vegan diet.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, you know, veganism's this, you know, upper class privileged, you know, way to eat is complete BS. Unless, yeah, if you're going to eat, you know, Ben and Jerry's vegan ice cream and Beyond Burgers every night, then yeah, it's going to be expensive. But people that just, you know, eat the food that's local to them in these countries, they're eating mostly plants.
I should have asked Toni if she ever shops at Whole Foods, because I feel like
probably not on a budget.
I feel like it's impossible to do everything she said while shopping at Whole Foods. But I don't know. Maybe she goes for certain things there.
Yeah, I don't. I doubt it.
So, would you take the food pill? The jet, you know, the Jetsons.
I don't
pill?
Know. No. Psychologically, I don't think I could. But yeah, I would if I could actually do it. If I could just eat for fuel and for substance, I would do it. But I just.
Well, obviously you would do it for some times, like if there's a meal on the go and you just pop a pill and then you're fully satiated, that's easy. But what if the hypothetical was you have to take the pill forever?
Okay, to be honest, yeah, I'd be interested.
Yeah, okay.
Because, I mean, it's okay. I'm not saying that people shouldn't love food and be foodies. I just personally... If I could just eat for substance and not need it, I think it's psychological for me that I don't feel that I need to take. I eat when I'm bored or when I'm stressed because I feel like it's like a relief or it gives me some pleasure. But if I could somehow eliminate that and find other reasons or other ways to cope with that, I would.
Yeah. Yeah. So you see food as... more of a useful tool.
Yeah, it's almost entertainment sometimes.
Right, but it's like you're not eating food for the sake of eating food. You're eating food because, like you said, you're bored or there's this other problem, maybe stress or you're hungry. You know, you need fuel, things like that. Like, that's how you see food.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I see it too.
It's not good food. It's like I raid the cupboard of all the treats I get the girls for their lunches.
And you eat all your daughter's treats?
Yeah, it's horrible, Kevin. It's horrible. I can't stop. And then I got to buy, like, I got to go, you know, three times a week to get them treats for lunch because I always like to give them a little dessert or something. And I even try to buy things that they like, but I don't, so that I won't eat it.
But you still eat it.
But there's really aren't many of those things. And then I eat all their junk. It's horrible. I can't stop.
That sounds like you actually like it then. You're actually eating that because you enjoy the food.
Yeah, no, it tastes good. It keeps me busy and it entertains me. And it's like, I get pleasure from it. See, like I've quit a lot of things. I mean, obviously I quit eating meat and dairy. I quit smoking pot like years ago. I quit drinking. I can't quit junk food. I can't stop sweets. I want to help. It's my cry for help.
See, I could probably cut out I don't want to say all refined sugar, but most of it and definitely all desserts and sweets. The thing I can't give up is coffee. I've tried so many times to give up coffee, and I am so addicted to coffee. I just can't
do
it.
Coffee's not the worst thing for you. I mean, there are worse things to be addicted to that aren't great for you, but it's not like there's so many, you know, calories in coffee, right? It's not going to give you heart disease or anything like that. But
all right, so audience members
can lead to other, like,
can let us know, like, whose addiction is worse, Kevin's or Ben's?
Oh, it's definitely mine. Sugar is way worse for you.
I don't know, man. Caffeine is like,
it's addictive, right? It's that, and that's the problem, that you need it.
Yeah.
And when you don't have it, you know, it your head hurts and you're exhausted. And
oh, it's definitely a physical addiction for sure.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily that coffee gives you a boost naturally. I mean, it does a little bit, but it's mostly the withdrawals that you're going through that coffee, you know, or caffeine in general, just kind of alleviates those withdrawal symptoms. Because it's a drug.
Yeah, so is sugar. So are so many things, right?
Is sugar classified as a drug?
I think so. Isn't refined sugar? Like, because our body gets addicted to it?
Maybe.
No, maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know. Either it's similar though, right? Because it's definitely addictive.
I do remember someone saying that the same part of our brain lights up when we see, you know, someone who eats fast food, when someone sees fast food, who eats fast food on a regular basis, the same part lights up when there's a cocaine addict.
Okay, who said this though?
Cocaine. It was in psychology class in college.
Oh, okay, so it's legit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because people say things all the time, and they say things like that, and they make claims, and it's like, well, where'd you hear that from? Well, that's what they say. I'm like, who's they? And so okay, I trust you that it's actually from.
No, that one's legit. I've been saying that for a long time. I remember a psych professor mentioning that. I can't remember exactly who it was, but I remember it was from college. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's the same experience. It just means that there's the part of the brain that, I guess, deals with addiction and reward sensations. That part lights up when you know, a fast food addict sees fast food and when a cocaine addict sees cocaine. I thought that was interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. Lesson learned, don't eat fast food or do cocaine.
This episode was kind of like a psych therapy session. We went through a lot.
I feel like I'm on the couch. I laid it all out there.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Tony asked me what I eat on a regular basis. She's trying, you know, it's like trying to figure out my relationship with food.
Yeah, we went deeper than we needed to with a food episode for sure.
Yeah, it's fun though. Food is always fun, right?
Yeah.
At least we're not talking about slaughterhouses and all that stuff this episode. It's nice to have a good, fun episode about food. And that book she's talking about, that next book coming out, that's exciting because I want to know what I should bring to my family parties, because those are the ones where you really can make a difference and they can try something and they say, oh my God, that really is.
Yeah.
Good. You know, that's important and that's really powerful. So I look forward to that book. Hopefully, comes out pretty soon, maybe before the holidays.
Yeah. That'd be perfect.
All right.
And
so,
I'm going to make some shepherd's pie.
Yeah, we got to get together. I want to see your chili and then Tony's shepherd's pie. We could do that. Maybe we get the families together for the holidays, or this summer.
That sounds like heaven.
Cool. All right, so let's move on to the news.
Okay, so big news out of India. I don't know if you saw this. So the High Court of Punjab and Haryana, I'm sorry to all our Indian listeners that I don't know how to pronounce that, has just ordered that animals are now to be considered legal persons in the Indian state of Haryana. So according to this, it means that animals in the state are no longer to be treated as objects or property and are entitled to justice.
Okay, this boggles my mind. I have a lot of questions. I'm sure your pronunciation was perfect, by the way. all animals or just cows or like
just says animals. Now in some provinces, which are Hindu and Sikh provinces, they're vegetarian, but they still drink milk. So right. Does this mean that this province is now going to be completely vegan? Or does it mean that they think it's okay to milk humans and keep them keep them for their own use, because that would be what they're doing to cows? So if they're equal, then they would have to do it to humans too.
Well, totally. I think they'd go in that direction. If anything, that's more okay because it's consensual, assuming you're getting consent, right? From
well, but that's the thing. Humans. If they're milking cows, that's not consensual. They're being kept as objects and property. So
correct.
I don't know. Like, I'm assuming that they think that, oh, no, that's okay, that's fine. But they're not being, you know, they're not equal to people then because they wouldn't do that to people.
Right. If you couldn't get consent from the human to take her milk, then it's definitely not okay. So why is it okay? If they are legal in the eyes of the law, if they are legally equal, then it seems like you're doing something wrong for sure. But yeah, it's weird because you can get consent from humans to get human milk. All right. So putting aside the vegetarian argument for a second, what else does this say about, like, what other animals? Chickens as well? And what do they mean?
It means all animals.
What do they mean legally equal? Like, obviously not the right to vote or representation in the political system. But they get a right to life?
Yeah, and autonomy. Wow. Except that if they're milking them, there's no right to autonomy. So I don't know. I don't, like, I need to learn more about this. It's because I'm sure they're not saying, like, okay, the whole province is now vegan. Because if the province is not vegan, then you are not treating humans and non-humans as equal.
Well, they could just be breaking the law. Somebody could not be enforcing the law. Maybe they.
But
passed
is that the law? The law. If this is actually correct, that the animals are now to be considered legal persons, it means it is illegal to not be vegan.
I still have. I have so many questions.
All right, go ahead.
I don't know. I'm thinking about earthworms. What do we do about the earthworms? Where do they draw the line, first of all? And where do they draw the line as far as legal equality or legal rights? So where do they draw the line along the animal kingdom? And then where do they draw the line in terms of equality? Like, is it true equality? I can't be. It's got to be some degree. And I'm all for it. I'm not arguing like I don't like this idea. I love it. Obviously, it's definitely a step in the right direction. I'm just wondering how they do it, practically speaking. How do they implement an idea like this? Because it's really groundbreaking.
I'm skeptical. You know me. I'm usually skeptical. I think they're almost pretending.
You're usually the optimistic one, man.
Yeah, right. Well, it's just like, it can't, like I said, if it's not, they're not vegan, then they're not actually doing what they say they are.
Correct. But maybe they haven't come to that conclusion yet. Maybe they haven't figured out, you know, like, they passed the correct law, the morally correct law, but now they're just finding out what that implies. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we thought about this, philosophically speaking. Animals and humans deserve equal rights to whatever degree. And we didn't think about the implications that would have.
They just haven't thought this through. That's what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
They go with this law. They thought, hey, this sounds great. And then someone's going to point this out to them and they'll be like, oh shit.
Yes.
I didn't think of that.
Exactly what I'm saying.
That would have been good. Then they'll be like loopholes. They'll say, except.
Right. Right. And I think that's exactly what will happen. They'll put exceptions into the rules, into the laws.
Yeah. I think then they need to be a lot more specific than they have the same rights, because they don't have the same rights if we're using them for anything.
Yeah. They can't have the same rights. It's got to be. I mean, maybe
you're right. They're not going to vote, but
right. But they might have
the same rights, the human rights that someone may have, or
sure, like the right to not be tortured or something like that.
That could certainly
be equal for both an animal and a human, and they could be equally weighted. So yeah, that, it's interesting. I don't know where it's going to go or how this is going to develop further. They might just be. sort of playing or testing with the idea so that other countries can see where this goes and take a lead, you know, from them and say, all right, they did it. Now we can do it too.
Yeah. But actually mean it.
Right.
Or maybe they do.
Little foresight.
Hey, maybe this is a new vegan province in India and I shouldn't be skeptical. I don't know.
I wonder if you're allowed to bring animal carcasses into that province. Like you could go slaughter them right outside the province and then bring them into the province and still eat them.
Oh, I don't know. Good question. Yeah, you'll have to ask Justice Sharma.
Because that was one of the problems that California faced when they banned foie gras. They were still importing it from other states. They banned the production of it, but they didn't ban the production of it in all states, right? So other states were still making it, and then they were selling it in California. But I think they finally passed a law forbidding that, too. That you can't sell it in California at all, either.
Oh.
So...
Well, there's that scene in Earthlings where they're not allowed to kill cows in the I don't know if it's all the Hindu provinces or specific ones. So they actually take the cows and they march them to a Muslim province where they can kill them.
Oh man, I forgot about that. I haven't seen Earthlings in probably a full decade.
Yeah, well it's towards the end of it. It's one of the last. Things they discuss, but
yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible.
So
yeah, it might be something like that. We'll anyway, it's certainly progress. Anytime people are talking about animal rights and moral equivalency for animals, then it's a good thing because we're having the conversation.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And if there's an animal rights lawyer in this province, they should challenge this. Not challenge it, but like. Say, all right, good. This is the law, and that means that this restaurant can't serve cheese anymore.
Right.
It's the law, right? And that is by the law. So, and do it on the grounds that, well, if they're equal, you wouldn't do that to a human.
Although I'm a little scared that that might cause
backfire, and then they just scrap the whole law altogether.
Yeah, exactly. They're gonna repeal the law. Shit, you're right. That we got to take this law out. Let's let's start again.
Maybe
I don't know. I don't know how it would work. Maybe you let it sit for a little while and then start addressing those issues in time. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll definitely
maybe
follow that story. All right. So what have we got for an excuse today?
All right, Kevin, your excuse today is to you need to think of the farmers. Okay, farmers rely on animal agriculture to live. And if what you're asking for is going to take away their livelihood and they're not going to be able to support their families anymore, and then you're going to have lots of starving children because you made the world go vegan.
Yes.
That's horrible. Horrible. Why would you do that?
Similar.
Think of the children.
I'm thinking of the children who are fed bacon on a regular basis, which is a class what carcinogen? Class one.
Yeah, with like asbestos and plutonium.
Right. Yeah.
So cigarettes.
I think of the children in that way. So yeah, you said cigarettes is a great example. That's where my mind goes when there were lots of tobacco farmers all throughout the U.S. And there still are, I'm sure, a lot of families who make money in the tobacco industry.
I grew up in tobacco country.
Yeah, it's right. You've said that many times here in Ontario, which is odd, but okay.
No. Southern Ontario is huge. Southwestern Ontario is huge for tobacco. Like the closer you get to Lake Erie. Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with people smoking cigarettes because it only affects, you know, assuming you're doing it in a place that doesn't cause secondhand smoke to be inhaled by others, then fine. Smoke all the cigarettes you want. You know, as long as you're an adult, I think that's fine. As long as you know that it's unhealthy, you're consenting and you can make that choice, I'm all for that. But in the case of animal agriculture, we're taking the lives of animals who cannot consent, who would not consent to this industry. So that's the huge, major difference between tobacco farming and animal agriculture. So I would come down harder on the animal agricultural farmers than we did on the tobacco farmers. And we came down hard on the tobacco farmers for a reason, because it was hurting us from a public health perspective. So we do have that public health perspective as well. Those same problems, similar problems in animal agriculture. But there's also so many different ways for them to shift. You know, you can just pivot. I know people get really mad and upset when that idea is thrown at them. They're like, no, this is our livelihood. We've been doing this for generations. You know, my great-great-grandfather was a pig farmer. I'm not going to start growing soybeans. But the world's always changing. It's always changing. And the way that you, I'm talking to the pig farmer now, raise pigs is not the same as the way your great-great-grandfather did it. So it's always changing. The world is always changing, and sometimes you have to adapt, you have to pivot, and there are lots of other things to farm that are in great need and don't cause harm to non-consenting individuals. Animals deserve better, and they're not things to be farmed. They're not pieces of property of which you own because you grew them or because you brought them into existence. They're not yours. They have their own right to life. They have their own livelihood, their own stake, their own interest in being alive and staying alive. And it doesn't matter who brought them into existence, and you know they were born on your farm. None of that matters. The fact is, what does matter is that they do exist, and therefore they have a right to life. And so, you know, I don't buy the sob story of you know, this is my livelihood. You're literally taking so much more from these animals than what we're talking about you sacrificing. And we're not saying sacrifice your entire livelihood. You're not going to be living in welfare or, you know, homeless or whatever, because there are lots of other jobs. As you've said many times before, Ben, people are still going to eat, right? So you're still going to have the same number of farmers. Food. Yeah, we need food. Exactly. We're still going to eat 3 times a day. There's still going to be a whole bunch of people, too many people on this planet, eating 3 times a day. So there's going to be a demand for food. Just shift what you're producing from one category to another, and you can still make a whole bunch of money. But again, I press on the point that says, even if your livelihood was, I guess, destroyed, we'll say quote unquote destroyed, and I'd argue that point, but even if it was destroyed, it's so little compared to the lives that are destroyed on a regular basis by animal agricultural farmers.
Yeah, I'm going to add to that too. And not to say that they're the same. I'm not making a direct comparison, but that's the same excuse that slave owners used to say on cotton plantations before the Civil War.
Yeah, you could also make the same argument with drugs, or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we learned it was wrong. It ended, and we came up with a new system.
I'm sure there are a lot of families that make money selling weapons, selling war machines. You know, like I can't think of what's the famous company that makes missiles and stuff.
Halliburton.
Yeah, Halliburton and Lockheed Martin. So I'm sure those companies support lots of families, but they're making a living by creating, you know, weapons that kill the other humans. So that gets political, I know, and I'm not attempting to get to that water. But it proves the point that just because some livelihoods are at stake doesn't mean we should continue doing what we've always done. We should always be ready to adapt and change. And look at the market now. Like, look at all the computers that exist now compared to 50 years ago. You know, we can't just remain stagnant. We have to adapt. There's so many jobs now that didn't exist 50 years ago, and vice versa. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think you get the point.
Yeah, that's true. We change.
Exactly.
Change is good. That's how society progresses. Imagine if society never changed, what we would still be doing.
I'll also say this point, one last thing, because I've said this in a couple of like events and speeches where I've had personal relationships with farmers as an undercover investigator, and they're not bad people. They're really not. And I've never met one person who likes killing animals. Like, they don't do that for the sake of killing. They usually do it for other reasons. And I think if given the alternative, if they had a choice where they could still make the same amount of money, if not more money, and you know, work the same amount of hours and still have some kind of tradition living on the farm and being in a rural community, then they would switch, you know, because now they don't have to kill animals anymore. You just take that out of the equation and everything else is the same. Of course they would make that switch.
And our government should be helping them do that.
Totally. Yeah. Instead of helping them stay where they are.
Instead of giving them billions of dollars to bail them out every year.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for joining us. And Ben, as always,
live vegan.
Thank you for listening to the Live Vegan Podcast.